I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Mark, I've been saying for years that Ping help you play your best because that is exactly what they've done for me throughout my entire career. And now I've been having a look at the new Blueprint S and T irons, and boy, they are impressive. So much so that I've got the new Blueprint S irons in my bag at the moment.
So what do you like about them so much? I mean, I've never seen you this excited about a golf club.
Well, I could go through the specs, which are exceptional, but I won't. I will say, though, that if you're looking for more ball speed and if you want to lower your scores, if you want to mix and match and still look great, you should check them out because the new Blueprint S and T irons, they are definitely worth a look.
Nice.
Just book in with your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting.
And now on Talk Birdie to Me, it's time for some bonus content. All thanks to our good friends at Ping, they'll help you play your best. You can see your local golf shop or professional for a Ping club fitting. And the Golf Clearance Outlet, great prices on great gear. They're in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth or online at golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. Now, time for some bonus content. Here's Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen on the most listened to Australian golf podcast. This is Talk Birdie to Me.
Well, the first time I remember seeing our next guest play was in 1983 in the Australian Open. His name is Peter Fowler. He went on to win that championship, and we've got him on to talk about the short game. G'day, Chuck.
G'day, mate. How are you? Very good to talk to you.
Mate, I'm really well. Hey, do you remember winning that Australian Open and that 12th hole? Talk us through that 12th hole.
Well, I was playing with Nick Price and Peter Senior, and I'm not sure how many, but I just had a couple of bogeys, and I just cleared the fairway trap with my driver and an old wooden driver. And they ran down, I think I had 230 to the hole, and I just cleared the front trap with a 3-iron and ran up to a foot away. So that was, yeah, and made the eagle.
Unreal. Now, we've got you on to talk about the short game. Nick and I, we do masterclass after masterclass, trying to help people with their short games. But when we think short games, the pair of us, we think about Seve Ballesteros, and your name is right there, Chuck. I mean, you were world famous for the way that you got the ball up and down from around the greens. I play with you a number of times. I always thought you were a great hitter of the golf ball as well. But we just want to talk to you about the short game, and we can't start without you telling us what it was like to have those short game comps with Seve Ballesteros.
Yeah, well, I guess, it was great. I played with Seve quite a number of times, and I was amazed at his short game, of course, and he often commented on mine. You know, he'd ask me how I played certain shots or what I was thinking when I played them. So that was, it was a good banter we had with each other. But when I think back about the short game, you know, like technically I'm not sure how good I was, but I grew up on a course, Pennant Hills in Sydney. They didn't have a driving range, but they had three practice greens, and that's where I used to I used to just chip and putt while I was waiting to caddy or before or after work when I was assistant pro. And I wasn't a great hitter, a striker of the ball. So, you know, to play professional golf, you've got to get around and under par. And my short game allowed me to do that.
Yeah, Chucky, I mean, I remember you from back then it was called the European Tour Days. Now it's DP World Tour Days. And it was you and Stephen Scarhill, I remember, always on the range or on the short game area, working your butt off. I mean, I think we need to maybe do a little bit of fact checking on this, but I have a feeling you might have hit the most golf balls in the history of golf. The only other player I think of might be Gary Player, because you were just an absolute grinder on the range. And it was always fascinating to watch you go about your processes. I mean, that work ethic, was it something was it more a fear of not, you know, of losing your game, or was it, were you always in search of something, the amount that you practiced?
Yeah, well, like I said, I wasn't a great ball striker, so I had to find a way to get the ball around the golf course. And so whether it was on the range, you know, trying to work out how to hit a fairway, I would just go through my clubs, and if I could hit 2-3 irons, one off the tee and one to the green, and still get it near the green and make a par, then that was good enough. But you know, whether it was fading it or drawing it, I tried them all. But when I think back, I may have hit too many golf balls, but, you know, we didn't have a lot of technology. I don't think I saw my swing on a video until I was in my 20s. And that's the technology they've got now with, you know, videos, TrackMan, just use your phone and all that. So we didn't have that. So it was trial and error, really, for guys of my era.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think you've always been a ping player your entire career, and I remember you used to use the Ping I2 lob wedge or the sand wedge? Was that the one you used for a lot of it?
Yeah, the Ping I2 sand wedge.
Yeah.
I think it was like 57.5 degrees is what I played with almost all of my career. I'm not very good with a 60. I've got a 60 now, but it's bent to 58, and that's as much as I can use.
Oh, that's brilliant. But your bunker technique, I mean, we talk about great bunker players around the world, and I always remember you saying, I don't know if it was to me or someone else, and they told me, but you always said, you know, if you have the correct bunker technique, you really should never hit a bunker shot away from the hole, because if you thin it, it'll go further and spin and stop next to the hole. If you fat it, it'll come out heavy and roll to the hole. And if you hit it how you want to, well, it'll just bounce and release and away you go. So was there anything specific with your bunker technique that you could probably share with our listeners out there as to how you went about it?
Yeah, well, what you just described, that's Greg Turner, who was also very good around the greens, and myself. We said, yeah, you know, if you hit it fat, it'll run up, land short and run up. If you pick it a bit clean, it'll land near the hole and stop. Or just the normal one, roll up to the hole. But back in my early days when I was playing the Pro-Am circuit in Queensland, which they called the Troppo Tour, because you go Troppo if you play it too long. there was a Scottish professional up there, Tom McNaughton, who was related to Gordon Brand Jr. from Scotland, who I'd played with many times. And I asked him about, he was a much older golf professional, I asked him how to be good out of the sand, and he just said with his Scottish accent, he said, you get a sand wedge and you just wear the bastard out, and then you get another one, you wear that bastard out. And I thought, that's a good analogy, because I had, before I used Ping, I had some Gary Player offset power sand wedges, and I wore two of them out where there's no grooves in the face. And, you know, people change their sand wedges now so they got nice fresh grooves, but I use those. I wore out about 4 or 5 sand wedges where there's no grooves in. And I think that's, you can have good technique, but you've really got to put the work in.
Yeah.
That's the deep down truth of it.
Yeah. And were you looking for more speed out of bunkers or just more of a slower, smoother swing? I mean, Peter Thompson always said just a nice, long, smooth swing. But I think when I remember playing with you, you always had a lot of speed in the sand. You really accelerated.
Yeah, I think, well, you get more spin if you accelerate a lot more, if it's you hit through it. But it was almost like every bunker shot was pretty much, whether it was a short one or a long one, it's always a 3/4 length swing with fairly good speed. But I tried to make the backswing as slow as I could, long, slow backswing, and then accelerate into the sand. That's what I have always tried to do. You know, like John Daly, he's got a nice slow swing, but he's got good club head speed.
Now, Chuck, I want you to think back to those days where you had the chipping comps with Seve Ballesteros. I mean, we touched on it, but I was always told that players would watch, and that doesn't happen too often on any tour anywhere in the world. Everyone's usually worried about their own game. But when you two were actually having a chipping comp, there was an audience. Now, can you remember what it was like just participating in that?
Yeah, well, you know, that was amazing. You know, I didn't do it very often, but a couple of times I did. It was amazing. And but his ability to conjure up a shot out of any lie, that's what really amazed me. And I about Seve, you know, I think it goes back to him learning to play golf on the sand at Pedrina, around Pedrina, Santander in northern Spain. We did play a Spanish Open at his course at Pedrina, and it was quite hilly and lots of dog legs, and that's where Seve really became creative, I think. He sort of funky lies, you know, bear lies, sandy lies, and sort of poking and slicing around trees and that. That's how he learned, and that's how I think he learned. And plus, I watched him with the other Spanish players. If one of them was struggling in their bunkers, he would say, well, listen, we're going to practice with our 7-irons out of the bunkers. And if you can get the 7-iron to work, then just go back to your sand wedge and it'll be perfect. Mm. And that's what he did.
Yeah, that's brilliant. I do that with some of the pros I help these days. I start them with a 7-iron, and once they figure that out, I say, right, we're going to go 5-iron and then 3-iron. And yeah, if you can do 3-iron, well, you're as good as Seve, basically. But funnily enough, I think Seve, he got into a bit of course design there at one point, and he redid the course in Switzerland, Crans-sur-Sierre, to basically all the greens being upside down sources so you couldn't hit them. And it's basically whoever had the best short game won that week. Do you remember that course?
I do remember it. Those first couple of years when he redesigned it, the greens were so hard, you couldn't get it on the green.
Yeah.
But his imagination around the greens was magic. I played, the first time I played with him was 1979 Australian Open at Metropolitan. I played with him on the Saturday. So I was pretty intimidated to say, you know, playing with an Open champion, Seve and that. And he entered in those sandy lies around Metropolitan, 50 yards from the green, when I thought there was no shot. And he was dancing it around the hole and spinning it, you know, getting it to 5 foot and stopping it. And that was just amazing to see. But people say he might have been a prima donna, but I don't think so. I think he just wanted to practice quietly by himself, but he inevitably always had a crowd.
Yeah, he was an absolute genius. So fortunate to play with him myself a couple of times, and if you watched him tee off, you'd think there's no way this guy is going to break 80, and then sure enough, he signed for par or better at the end of the round. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Hey, Pete, I've got a question here from one of our listeners, Golf Trader, and he wanted to ask you this. How much is your short game genius learned from creative practice and tapping into the other legends, as we've spoken about with Seve, and also what sort of ideas would you offer to the average golfer with a chipping and wedge play to help them improve contact and confidence?
Well, I think my short game, I was a caddy at my golf club at Penneth Hills, and I caddied for the assistant pros. I caddied for the pro, Ian Alexander, many times. But I would just go to the practice green, and if I struggled with a shot on the golf course, I went to the practice green and I played it over and over and over and over again until I worked out how to do it. And if I was still struggling, I would ask the pro or get some advice from someone who I thought played it well, and then I would keep practicing. So and I developed quite a stiff-wristed action because I thought it was most consistent under pressure. And when I went down to Melbourne playing off a lot of the hard pan, I felt that was that worked out well for me. I know a lot of guys use a lot more wrist action, but some shots you do need it, like the high flop shot. But it's trial and error, really. You know, if I was having trouble out of mud, I would practice out of mud, and I would if I was scared of duffing a shot, I would practice duffing it on purpose, so I learned how to hit that shot. If I struggled at it off the hard pan, I would find a dirt road, a Kingston Heath in the middle of the golf course, in the middle of the bushes, and I would practice that shot until I could take it onto the golf course. And these are the sort of things I was that shaped my short game. I would, you know, for example, if you wanted to learn how to slice it, you would go behind a tree and force yourself to slice it around the tree. And I think that's what's wrong with a lot of practice ranges now. They're so sterile. There's not enough trees in the practice ranges to hook and slice and go under or over them. And that's I think that's a real problem for being creative.
Well, Peter, I caught up with you at Kingston Heath a few weeks ago, and you told me something that I was just stunned about. We're going to take a short break, but when we do, I'm going to ask you that question. You can talk us through that part of your technique.
Okay.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Now, if you haven't checked out the Golf Clearance Outlet, then you, I can guarantee you this, are missing out. And if you have, well, you know what we're talking about. Great time to drop in, because with all the new equipment released in January, good old Sam at the Golf Clearance Outlet is licking his lips because the stores are chock full of 2023 branded clearance product. And you know, that was a hell of a year for golf equipment, Nick.
You're spot on there, Mark. There's heaps of gear for righties, of course, but as you know, I am a lefty, so there's a heap of gear for lefties as well, and plenty for both men and women. And if you're after a great Prezi idea, you can get gift cards in-store or online.
So if you're looking for great golf gear and great prices, the Golf Clearance Outlet needs to be in your plans to go and check it out. See the team in-store at Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, or online, golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. It's that simple, Nick.
Can't wait.
Hang on, Nick. I thought you were righty putting now.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Hey, Nick, I know you've heard of the Watch My Numbers app. It is brand new, and it is going to dominate the golf app scene for a long, long time. If you want to improve your game, you need to know the areas you're doing well in and where you need to improve. And this app will tell you exactly that, Nick.
Yeah, you're spot on, Mark. It's the most powerful database golf app in the world, and it helps analyze and improve your game like never before, because it uses real-time data from your rounds and highlights the areas of your game that you want to look at.
You get actionable and usable info in minutes, not hours. That's really important. It's easy to use. You can set up your profile very quickly. I've done mine. And start accessing data and subscriber-only content straight away.
Hmm. Who's it aimed at?
Well, it's aimed at people who want to improve their game. It's for all levels of every golfer out there. Particularly powerful if you're a mid to low handicapper. But it's great for the elite level and pros as well.
So elite and pros as well. I like that.
Watch My Numbers. Download it from the App Store and turn your bogeys in the birdies.
Thanks to Ping, they'll help you play your best. And the Golf Clearance Outlet, who search the globe for golf's best deals. This is Talk Birdie to Me. Now back to Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen.
So we're talking with Peter Fowler, short game wizard, short game legend. Pete, when I caught up with you a couple of weeks ago at Kingston Heath, I was talking about the way I'd been chipping, because I, you know, the grass that we play off at Kingston Heath, the short couch grass, it can make you look like a fool really quickly. And you were telling me that, you know, all the members up at the Australian Golf Club, they've all got the same problem. You know, they're all chunking their shots or thinning their shots. They've all got the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
And I told you that I've been chipping with the heel in the air of my wedges, and it just goes through the grass. And you said to me that that's how you chipped your entire career.
Yeah, that's correct. I had high hands, and I'd get the heel off the ground, and then you get less drag on the sole of the club. So with the heel off the ground, which I think kills chipping, it allows you, if you do hit the ground, you'll hit the ground with the toe of your club, which will keep the club face open, because the death of chipping is when the club face closes. So that if you can keep the heel off the ground, only hit the ground with the toe of the club, then that will force the club to stay open, and it's a good shot. And then I had lessons off Phil Rogers, who was a famous American professional who played a lot with Byron Nelson and Hogan and these guys, because he was friend. He was taught by Paul Runyon, who was a magic short game exponent.
Yeah, he was a legend.
He was a legend and a very short hitter, but he was dynamite inside a wedge distance. And anyway, I had these lessons off Phil Rogers. And around the greens, he said, okay, get that heel off the ground, get the toe in under the ball. If you've got a funny, funky lie, you can get the toe under the ball. And that's when that sort of proved to me that I was on the right track.
Yeah, that's incredible. Now, did that actually, out of curiosity, because whenever I played with you, that almost carried over into your putting as well. You used to have the heel off the ground with the putting as well. Is that a, was that a result of the sort of the short game work, or was that something different?
No. Yeah, that was different probably. My coach, Ian Alexander, who's turned 88 the other day, and we still play, you know, once or twice a week when I'm in Sydney. He had a very high hand action. He played, a lot of the old pros will tell you, he played this most of his career with an old hickory shafted putter, wooden shaft, had lots of binding on to hold the wooden shaft together. But he was very high hands and he stand very close. So, you know, when you watch someone who's good at putting, and he taught me to play from the time I was 12 years old, I guess it rubbed off on me. So, you know, I stood close to the ball with my high hand action. I just wanted to get all the wrist action out of my putting and pretty much that I think that went into my chipping and pitching a bit.
So when did you realise that you're a bit different to everybody else and people were watching your short game when you played with them and they were trying to learn things? Or did you ever see other players copy it? Did you ever see other players grind their sandwiches the way you used to grind your sandwiches? When did you know that you were marvelled at, to tell you the truth?
I used to get my sandwiches and I'd grind them how I didn't grind the back off them. I just wanted the blade, the sole to be thinner. And part of that came when I started playing in Melbourne, because I'm from Sydney and the sand is very soft and the grass is very soft. When I went to Melbourne, I couldn't play the shots that I wanted because the sand was much firmer. The turf was much tighter and better grass, in my opinion. And I got my sandwiches and I ground the sole with a thinner. There was an old McGregor sandwich, one of Nicholas's designs, and also Phil Rogers designed some Cobra sandwiches with a nice thin sole, but they still had plenty of bounce on them. And that's what I sort of modelled my grinds on. And now when I get my sandwiches from Ping, I just ask him, can you grind the bottom of it a bit? When Carsten was alive, the reps used to come along to my bag and they'd hide my sandwiches because they didn't want Carsten to see my grind because he believed his designs were technically better.
So when did you know in your head that your short game was better than just about everybody else's?
When I got it in the hole quicker. you know, obviously I wanted to hit the ball, drive the ball better like Greg Norm, and I wanted to hit my irons like Bernard Langer, and I had to play professional golf, you've got to get the job done. And that was the easiest way for me to get it done at the time. And it's funny, when I think back about my career, I always play better on golf courses that have good chipping greens and putting greens because I could work on my game better. If they didn't have good facilities, I struggled that week.
Wow, that's interesting.
That's very interesting, yeah. Hey, Peter, I heard a story about you years ago, and you've got to clarify whether this is true or not. There was a course we used to play at the Trophy Lancome, and it finished up with a par 3.
Yes.
And I heard you might have laid up on that par 3. Is that correct, to either make the cut or win the tournament or something like that?
I didn't lay up. I tried. It was a long, skinny green.
Yeah, I remember it. I've played there.
Yeah, so you remember there was a bunker in the front right of the green, and then over the bunker was a lake.
Yep.
On the right, and left was dead. And I tried to punch it down, land it short of the green, and then bounce it up on the green. So I figured if I hit that shot the way I wanted to, I couldn't go on the lake. I had to make a bogey to make the cut, I think. So I didn't want to hit it in the lake and make a double bogey. So that's, unfortunately, I I didn't cut it. I wanted a punch cut off the tee, and I pulled it straight into the stand. But anyway, I chipped it on. I think I made a bogey to make the cut.
I think the layup story is even better, but we might still run with that.
Hey, Chucky, just finally, whenever I talk about your short game, I always talk about the greatest chip shot that I've ever seen, and you were playing with me at Royal Adelaide.
Yeah.
The story doesn't start well for you. You shanked the shot into the pine trees on a par three. And then you were on top of the pine needles. You had to hit a shot under a branch. You had to keep this chip low.
Yes.
You had to if you wanted to get the ball close, you had to carry a bunker, and the ball had to land on the downslope, and the pin wasn't cut too far over the downslope. Now, you almost hold the shot. It was impossible. Now, I just want to know, can you? It must have been mid-90s. Can you remember that shot?
Yeah, I think it was at Cooyonga. I think it was in
maybe it was.
I think it might have been Cooyonga Golf Club, and I shanked it off the par tree. I think Graves and Mike Harwood were commentating at the time. South Australian Open, I believe, but... when there's pine needles like that, I do practice around the practice green off the pine needles because that's, you know, I'm in the rough a lot.
Yeah.
Again, I know how to hit a low shot. I know how to nip it like a bunker shot.
Yeah.
And it's just pulling it off in the situation, you know, like the fact that it goes close.
It was unlucky not to go in. I mean, it was unlucky.
Yeah.
It was unlucky. You were so stiff that it didn't go in. And I'm like, I just thought you were going to hit it sideways. I still can't believe you went at the hole.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, like, well, sometimes I think, well, okay, if I don't pull it off, I'll be in the bunker. I can get that up and down.
Yeah.
It's. I'd learned from Seve that you can get it close from anywhere. And I believe that's still the case. It might be almost impossible, but you can do it. You just got to have the imagination, and be able to formulate it in your head so you can pull it off. And that's the first thing I think with a shot around the green is you've got to be able to hit. Don't worry about getting it close to the hole. You've got to be able. You've got to learn how to hit the shot first, and then after you can hit the shot repeatedly. Then you can start aiming at targets, and that's I think that's important for people to realise that you don't want to just go straight for the pin. You've got to be able to hit the shot first.
Actually, that's a really good thing, Pete. When people have had trouble with their short games, and I've been charged to try and help, I never let them aim at anything when I'm practicing or trying to teach them any kind of technique.
Yeah.
I just want them to hit the ball solid. And what you said there is, if you're listening and you're having trouble with your chipping. You don't always just have to aim at something when you're practicing your chipping. Just get that technique right. Get used to hitting the ball with the middle of the club face. It's so important. And then bring a target in the play. I agree with you 100%.
Very true. And I've seen it recently from some clips of Lee Trevino, who I think describes it very, very well. He said, you've got to learn to hit the ball solid. So don't aim at anything. This is just on the range or chipping or whatever. You've got to hit the ball solid. As I've got older, I realise we stop hitting the ball solid, and you've got to get it. You've got to keep it back in the stance where you can feel like you can really hit the ball solid. And then when you repeatedly hit a few shots the same, that's when you're ready to aim at targets. Mm. Very important.
Yeah, and then you get the. And
great
then,
advice.
And then you get the players who see things that others don't, like Peter, like Seve, yeah. and those. I mean, some people, they have great short games, but they can't hit those shots where you just can't believe it because they actually don't see the shot. Tiger was like that as well.
No, exactly. Yeah, seeing the shot. Bubba Watson's great. He sees the shot his way, and he can pull it off.
Yeah. I saw his shots, but I couldn't pull it off. So.
No.
He was unbelievable. Now, these days, Pete, I think you're in Sydney as you're chatting to us now with I guess the granddaughter in the background, I think.
Yes.
How is life for you these days? What sort of things are you up to? You're obviously still playing competitive golf. What are you really doing these days?
Actually, someone said to me, you love playing golf, and I said, yes. And I said, hang on a sec. No, that's not correct. I said, yeah, I like playing golf, but it's competing that I really like.
Mm.
And I believe that staying on tour as long as I can, I'm still playing on the European Legends Tour, which I'm glad about. Still got a ranking to get into the tournaments.
Wow.
So I'm preparing my body constantly in the gym on a weekly basis, and trying to get my game in shape to get back over there in May and play for 6 months. I've got four kids and they're all living in Sydney now. I'm living in Auckland, New Zealand, with my wife, who's from New Zealand. But we spend a lot of time in Sydney with my four children, and we've got seven grandkids now. So that's keeping my wife very busy.
Wow!
Yeah, but it's a lot of fun watching them grow up.
Wow, that's incredible. Hopefully you can add to your list of seven wins on the European Legends Tour over there. So it's been a pleasure chatting with you, Pete. We really appreciate it, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the short game here at Kingston Heath, I'm guessing. Mark, what do you think?
Thanks so much, Chooky. We really appreciate it.
Now, thanks, Mark and Nick, and thanks for having me on your great show.
Superb. Mate, you're all a star, right, Pete.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you down in Melbourne.
All see right. you, mate. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for being part of Talk Birdie to Me with Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. And if you want to be part of the show, drop us a message or comment on the socials. Or you can send an email or leave a voicemail at talkbirdietome.com.au. Thanks to the great team at Ping, they're the best in the business and they'll help you play your best. And the Golf Clearance Outlet. If you're after top quality at prices you won't beat, check them out. golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. Talk Birdie to Me's executive producer is Dan Bradley at Kaizen Media. Sound design, Daryl Misson at loudzebra.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.